This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
Place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Come Santa Claus riding down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening. And joining me as always, nipple as hard as ever in this freezing cold weather, is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Thank you, JR.
It's actually not that cold. I just felt like
no, it's really
your nipples for some reason.
Don't get like Rotella. He's very random and queer and crazy like that. JR, always a pleasure. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to the longest running episodic motherfucker on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
472 of the gold standard. And I have to say, we've got a lot of great feedback, JR, for our last two episodes.
Yeah.
The build to WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 3 itself was one of our best shows last week. And we got some good feedback on Twitter and some of our other fans. So thank you. It was an exceptional show.
A lot of love for my grading of Steamboat Savage, so that was good.
And a little vitriol, but that's, hey, you know what? That's the point of the show.
It was a lot of vitriol.
It was a lot of vitriol, but you know there was. But that's all right. That's right. I got a little vitriol myself for a couple of my comments. But you know what? That's what makes these shows great. So, JR, always a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Tonight, post-mortem, but we move along in 1987 with another one of our... A show that kind of snuck up on me when I was watching it today. Much more entertaining show than I anticipated. Why don't we dive in?
Yeah, and it's an interesting time because, you know 85, what goes on with Hogan. You know 86, kind of what goes on with Hogan, right? So now we're kind of – I feel like we're in the first summer of Hulk where we don't have like that definitive big-time summer feud laid out.
Right.
obviously, the stuff with Andres we'll see tonight is still burning, but – they're not going to start throwing that out around the circuit. You know what I mean? So it's kind of
no.
The Hulk feud that's going to get us through the summer? So I'm kind of curious. This almost feels like a lost summer to me in many ways. So I'm curious to see how it holds up as we move through this plethora of MSGs that we got coming up and everything else. So I'm curious starting tonight to see how 87 unfolds.
I agree with you. I vaguely remember it. It was the summer after I graduated from grammar school, and I was heading into freshman year in high school, and I remember watching a lot that summer, and it was very odd because, as we talk about, Andre and Hogan didn't, blaze a trail. I went to multiple house shows that summer at the Coliseum, and I don't remember seeing Andre at all. In fact, I barely remember seeing Hogan, but it should be very interesting how we go through, because after this, we go back to our home office for quite a while, so we'll be at the Garden for good hunk. But tonight, JR, we are heading to South Bend, my friend, home of the Irish, for it is the May 2nd, 1987, Saturday night's main event, taped only a few days earlier, April 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that old. It's not as old as the March one was. The March one seemed like it was really old. That's why I still think that's why I don't disagree with you guys about the whole NBC not letting them do Mania, but I also think that that show was so old, it was almost a month old of taping.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It's the commentary that tells it. I'm not getting into it again, but there have been others on like Kayfabe Memories and other sites have corroborated what we talked about, that it was likely. I think Ebersole on NBC just kind of wanted Saturday's main event to be its own universe and not plug City for everything else. So I think that's more likely. I think just them have. I mean, they can freshen anything up with commentary, and they don't. If the commentary talked about it and nothing else, I'd agree with you, but.
Yeah. No, it is what it is. But the show's over, and now we move on, and now they really talk about it because it's over. So, yes, it was taped on April 28th and aired May 2nd, 1987, from the Edmund Joyce Center on the campus of the University of Notre Dame, a place actually Vince liked going to. He liked going to ND a lot. Over the next several years, you'll see, obviously, they go to plenty of house shows. They do a lot of superstars and challenge tapings, because I remember when you watch Primetime you see a lot of superstars matches, and they always say they're in South Bend. So they go there a lot. They went there a lot in the 80s and early 90s.
Joyce.
Joyce. I don't know if they – I don't remember if they do a lot of Raws there. Probably not. I'm sure they didn't go there during the Attitude Era to a Catholic college, but I don't know.
It's like the Scranton Youth Center. They got thrown out in the Attitude Era.
Exactly. Or the Fernwood Resort. I wonder if that's even open. I have to look into that. Anyway.
I think McGinn went there on his honeymoon.
What's that?
I think McGinn went there on his honeymoon.
Yes,
Fernwood Resort.
Well, because he wanted a discount. All right. Obviously, this is taped. So what was going on this evening, JR, on May 2nd, Vince, once again, we've seen this often, mm-hmm. particularly on Saturdays, broke the roster up into threes. Mm. So three separate house shows on this Saturday, two of them in big venues. Take a listen. This isn't one of them. They were at the Arena in Clinton, New York.
Sounds made up.
And Greeny looked it up. It's somewhere with a bunch of trees and some unpaved roads. He said it looked like a high school gym or some kind of.
It had to be like a high school show. When you look at this card, it had to just be like a fucking charity show or something. You know, they just like throw out the Z team up there and just
exactly. So here was the card.
School or something.
Oh, it had to have been. It had to been like, you know, Boy Scouts or something. Terry Gibbs took on a gentleman by the name of Tom McGee.
I'd like to see more of his matches if they're anywhere.
Nobody else does. Paul Roma took on Steve Lombardi. They're both better than Tom McGee. B. Brian Blair of the Killer Bees, Jim Brunzel, took on the Shadows, mm-hmm. who was a tag team you'd see a shitload of mm-hmm. in the summertime on primetime. They were all over the primetimes in the summer of 87. 88, too, I think.
George Animal Steel. Rare some 87.
I know, yes. Exactly. Your women's champion, the Fabulous Moolah, took on Velvet McIntyre. George Animal Steel took on Kamala. And the main event was Billy Jack Haynes and Hercules in a WrestleMania rematch. It was a chain match, which I'm sure was probably a gimmick they used throughout the circuit post-WrestleMania.
It's weird they throw that there.
These I know, right?
Beat the shit out of each other with a chain in this fucking middle school. The wrestling game.
I know, imagine.
In New York.
The second house show, big venue, one of Vince's favorite places, the old Rosemont Horizon mm-hmm. in Chicago. Where, of course, the Dream Team's career went straight down the toilet. It's a nightmare. And now look what happened to them. Outback Jack defeated Jimmy Jack Funk. Ron Bass defeated Pedro Morales. The Can-Am Connection defeated Don Morocco and Bob Orton Jr., another WrestleMania rematch. The Rougeaus defeated the new Dream Team. Well, they're off to a blazing start. Hacksaw Jim Duggan defeated the Iron Sheik. Coco Beware defeated Danny Davis. Tito Santana fought Butch Reed to a 20-minute draw.
Tasty.
I bet you that was probably actually a halfway decent match.
I bet it was really good if it's anything like their Superstars one I watched.
And the main event, actually, it's probably a pretty damn good one. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat defeated the Macho Man Randy Savage in a steel cage match. So pretty fucking good card.
Yeah, it's a nice little card at Rosemont.
Yep. And in the evening, JR, a big card at the Boston Garden. No surprise here. Boston Garden always had Saturday night shows. This one mostly was on... You probably saw these throughout the summer or throughout the month of May on primetime. Demolition defeated the Islanders. Iron Mike Sharp pinned C.V. Afi. He was still with the company in 87.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's in there. I think he's until 88.
I'm sure we'll see him plenty.
No, I think we're done. Didn't we eulogize him with Kelly?
We did eulogize him. You're right.
Yeah, I don't think we see him again, but I'm pretty sure he's around for quite a while.
Hulk Hogan defeated King Harley Race. I don't know if it was the title. I imagine it was. Sika pinned the Duke, Pete Doherty. Brutus Beefcake defeated Johnny V. So Johnny V was in Boston, but his tag team was in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's going to go back there after the nightmare. So.
Yeah. Ken Patera. Really? We'll get more about him actually in a few minutes because there's a clip of him. This guy was subbing for Jake Roberts, pinned Honky Tonk Man. We'll get more about him in a moment. Hart briefly joined the commentary team of Gorilla Monsoon and Lord Alfred Hayes at ringside after the bout. Full Nelson, we'll get more to that in a minute. And your main event, the Hart Foundation, your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, defeated the British Bulldogs by disqualification at 7:47. So there was your... So of those three cards, JR, what do you think? I think Chicago might be the best one.
Boston's pretty good, too. They're close. They're both good. That's a quality day of wrestling right there if you fly... If I don't know if Chicago is a day show, but if you could make both,
prime time, you're kind of fucked. But the double whammy of you got Hart's Bulldogs and Hogan Harley in Boston, and then you got Tito Butch in a draw, and then you know, Steamboat Savage, in a cage.
Yeah.
I pay for that easily.
Yeah, no, it's a good, it's a quality day of wrestling. We'll see if this evening show holds up. So why don't we dive in, Scott? Of course, it is kind of our first big-time post-WrestleMania show. We haven't been in the Garden, and we haven't really had anything televised besides, like, the local, maybe Boston or a Philly or something.
Right.
we open, of course, with promos by Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat, the Hart Foundation, Jim Duggan, Andre the Giant, Bobby Heenan, and Hulk Hogan all give our pre-show promos. Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura welcome us to the show and sets the stage for a night of action. Vince has some late-breaking news, and we head back to earlier today on Superstars, where Ken Patera, Scott, who you mentioned earlier, had returned and messed up Bobby Heenan during a big debate leading to the Brain being in a neck brace here this evening. Should we talk about Kenny P, I guess? I don't know when we're going to see him. Maybe a while.
Oh, yeah, we probably won't see him. I mean, I'm sure he's on the house show circuits, but Ken Patera, of course, I mean, he's back. We don't have to do his whole thing because we had him on earlier. Right. But Ken Patera, of course, went in the clink for the whole Mr. Him and Saito with the girl at the McDonald's and pushing the cops and everything. So he was in the pokey for a brief time. And apparently you and I were talking, I think you and I talked about it the other day, right? That I guess Vince promised him a job when he returned. So
here it is. Came back.
And there it is.
Came back in the spring of 87, spent the previous year in prison, like you mentioned. We've got vignettes airing on WWF TV. We even got a Coliseum video called The Ken Patera Story, chronicling his career and his return. He was in top physical condition at this point. Appearance had changed. He had, of course, the brown hair instead of the blonde. He had the creamy hairless legs in this look here. I don't know. He's wearing, again, we've talked about this, I guess, but we'll be revisiting. He's got, like, fucking nylons on, it looks like.
It does look like he's got nylons. He's got pantyhose on. But so, that hair is terrible. That hair is worse than, like, Lanny Poffo's hair.
Yeah.
And Lanny Poffo's hair is pretty awful. But that hair, it's like, oh, God.
Patera said he decided to wrestle with his natural hair color at that point for whatever reason. To ensure he'd be accepted as a babyface now, he claimed that Bobby Heenan had abandoned him and sold him down the river while in prison, and they would take their differences to a debate, which is what Vince references here, that turned physical. Patera swung Heenan around by the neck with a belt, and then Heenan would have, of course, the neck brace on for months, and that led to a Patera versus Heenan family feud that we'll cover, I'm sure, going forward. This whole story is kind of weird because Patera does not come across like a likable face at all. He's a guy that he's the one that broke the law, got sent to prison. Why are we supposed to like feel bad that Bobby Heenan abandoned? Like, what is? I mean, I guess it's kind of a douchey thing to do to your friend, but like, why does Bobby have to stand by him? It's not like Bobby. I can see Bobby had set him up on the job that got him arrested or something. You know what I mean? But Bobby had nothing to do with him going to jail. So, like, why are we supposed to be upset that Patera's not holding himself accountable? And Bobby actually, like, makes those points that makes him seem even more likable. He's like, you're not being accountable for what you did, asshole. Basically, why are you blaming me? And then he just assaults him and beats the shit out of him. The whole thing, just, like, they're trying so hard to make Patera face, but I think they ended up making him seem, like, more like a heel. Do you agree?
No, I absolutely agree. I mean, what's Bobby supposed to do? You book him on the prison circuit? Like, what the fuck is he supposed to do? You're the asshole who threw a rock through the fucking window at the McDonald's, and you're the one who shoved the cops around at the hotel. What are you supposed to – what are we feeling bad about? This was another one of those cases, and it kind of starts here subtly, but it gets worse when we get to some bigger storylines over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years. When – there really wasn't anything they could do for Ken Patera. So obviously he's an ex, you know, family member. So let's do something about it. But what could you do? He went to jail. So I don't know. Just say it's Bobby's fault. Like kind of the whole Andre heel turn that the gorillas tried to do.
Right. What they could have done is, I mean, this is what they could have done, right? You have one of two things. Just make him a heel. Okay. Which I don't know. Maybe they didn't want to do because maybe he just didn't want to do it coming out of jail, but I think he would have been perfect. Just make him a jailbird, put him with Heenan, and let him be the enforcer. Or have Bobby bring him back in the fold, and then he has the family turn on him. You know what I mean? So then now we feel bad because he brought the guy back, he promised him a push or whatever, and then right away he has like whoever beat the crap out of him be like, fuck you, you're an idiot, you went to jail, you know. I don't care if you rehab yourself. I want nothing to do with you. You're a loser. You know what I mean? Like have him really lay into him instead of this where Patera comes back with the axe to grind for no reason.
An axe that he has no right to grind.
Right.
I mean, Bobby pretty much says all along, what am I supposed to do for this guy? He put himself in jail. What am I supposed to do? And even Gorilla and Gorilla was, you know, sometimes he wasn't good at this either. They just talk in a circle. And they talk in a circle, and we're supposed to sit here and just go, yeah, what he said. Now, again, you know, some of us were, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, so you're like, all right, whatever. But, you know, again, you look back and you're like, well, he went to jail. And we'll see this with other guys, you know, over the next, you know, 15 years in wrestling that dealt with that. And it's kind of hard to be sympathetic about him, you know? I mean, what do you do? So I think they were kind of painted into a corner, JR, of what to do with Patera, you know?
Yeah.
I think the best thing was what you said. Bring him back, kind of make him a heel, or start him as a heel, pretend he's in the family, and then have like Andre fucking headbutt him to death and, you know, or whatever, Bundy splash him
Him a heel. Just get, you know what, he's a proven heel. He just came out of jail for being a dick. You know, like the Heenan family could use another enforcer. Why not throw him in, put him in a team of Hercules? Like that would have been cool, you know? Anything like that. Just let him do something as a heel.
Put his Olympic stuff, like pretend he's living in the past, put his Olympic stuff back on. And,
right.
You know, you could still cut his hair a little bit. You could keep it brown. It doesn't have to be blonde. But, I mean, this was just, and again, this is, we'll see this multiple times where they just couldn't think of something creative to really make you feel invested in him.
And and it's not like they didn't care because they give a ton of time. I don't know if they just thought that this was worth, I don't know, maybe they just figured people would be sympathetic because he was in jail. That's the only thing I can think of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because a lot of people didn't know the backstory in 1987. They just, you know, he went to jail and he's atoning for his sins or whatever, but how'd you get there? Well, I wanted a Big Mac at 2 a.m. and this bitch told me no, so I fucking threw a brick.
And like, why not? Maybe even just lie for the story. Just fucking say something like, why not say something, I don't know.
Bobby Heenan sold me out.
You know, he's the one that called the cops. He set me up. You know, like do something like that.
But you don't. It's just like they never explain the selling out part.
Right.
Like all they did was Bobby, you sold out, and Gorilla, and you know, Bobby tries to explain, what am I selling out? I went to jail. Was I supposed to manage him?
Right.
No. And nobody, there was no way to explain out of that. So in the end, you're just like, whatever. His hair's bad, and he's got creamy legs, and move on. Like, you know, there was anything to invest in it. So anyway, that opened the show, whole little clip, which they explained why Bobby was in a neck brace.
Okay.
And he'd be in a neck brace literally till like the end of the year.
Yeah, pretty much. He's in it for a while. So Gene is backstage. He talks to Kamala, Kimchi, and Mr. Fuji, who's the new manager taking over for the Wizard, who's been put out to pasture. They talk about the battle of Jake Roberts coming up tonight, despite Kamala's fear of the snake. Gene then talks to Jake, who's been having a tough go of it lately. Gene thinks the guitar scrambled his brain, and that's why he took this match. He's not thinking clearly. And that does bring us to our very interesting opening match. Jake the Snake Roberts taking on Kamala, who's still hanging around with Fuji Wizard gone. Down the ladder a bit, though. Jake still in this issue with Honky Tonk Man. Now a fully baked face with the crowd is super, super hot for. Yes. Jake comes in and unleashes the snake, sending Kamala scurrying to the floor. Already the crowd is chanting DDT, just completely locked in. Kamala returns and attacks Jake from behind, chopping away and landing a kick to the gut. Jake fends him off with a boot and right hands, but Kamala lands a thrust to the throat to cut him down. Kamala kicks and chops away and goes to a bear hug, but Jake breaks free and stomps on the feet of Kamala. Kamala runs around the ring and rides in the corners. Jake talks about the disadvantages of wrestling barefoot, as Jesse, I should say. Jake starts working the arm, but Kamala chops him down and chokes away as Jesse talks about why Joey Morella should be suspended based on his actions back at WrestleMania. Jake starts to punch his way back into things, but Kamala cuts him down to a series of headbutts. Things spill outside where Kamala stalks Jake, who buries Kamala with a knee lift when he comes back in. Jake lands another leaping knee lift off the bottom rope, but as he loads the DDT, Kimchi comes in and decks Jake with the cane as Fuji's tying up the ref. Kamala follows with a splash and gets a big upset win. After the match, Kimchi unmasks and reveals to be the Honky Tonk Man. I thought this was a great bit. Honky hits a shake right on the roll, which is like rare. I think he never hits it. And rubs it in on the mic after. Jake is really bulletproof, but this was a shocker. Even with the honky stuff, I was still surprised that he basically lost clean. Big plans to maybe continue a Kamala repush by having him get the win. I don't know. Part of it, though, of course, is to sell Jake's neck and the Honky Tonk Man attack and continue the feud. Really fun match. Good psychology with both men. especially Jake working the feet. Good opener, hot crowd, weird finish until the reveal. But still weird to see Jake go down like that, regardless of even Honky. Like, I would have seen maybe if they had Kimchi come in and whack him and draw the DQ or something, you know what I mean? But to actually see Jake get pinned was, like, jarring, too. Especially Kamala, who hasn't really been around too much. So I gave it 2 stars, Scott.
I gave it 2 stars as well. And I got to tell you, probably the coolest you'd probably ever see Honky as a heel.
Yeah.
Seeing him in the Kimchi outfit was fucking great. I mean, it really was. It's a great swerve. Keeps that feud going after Honky with the win at WrestleMania, and now, you know, Kamala. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you, a lot of respect for Jake, though, in the sense that he assumes, Vince and the bookers do, that Jake is that much over that losing doesn't really mean much. And that's that whole wins and losses debate that we always seem to have whenever a scenario like this comes up. But Honky is continuing to get over, or trying to get over, using him a lot. And I thought this was very creative. I thought it was really good, you know, to take a masked character and hide another heel under it.
Yeah.
That was really good. I thought it was really good.
No, it was a nice
match. Match was solid enough.
No, I liked the match. I thought it had some good psychology. I thought Kamala looked really good too. Like, he's a guy that you could see continuing this push if they want with Fuji there. But yeah, Jake and Honky's been a good feud. They're continuing obviously past Mania where Honky got the win. And I really liked the attack. And like you said, I thought Honky looked great as a heel here. I thought he looked really vicious. He's actually looked vicious this whole feud. You know, the attack on the snake pit, now this one here. And definitely makes him look pretty smart. Again, jarring to see Jake lose, but then that even makes the payoff even better when he unmasks this Kimchi.
One time for the match, 418. Yeah, I thought it was fine.
It shows you, though, too, already. We've talked about how bulletproof Jake is.
Yep. Absolutely.
That, again, that they don't even protect him. Like, most guys who maybe you protect with the DQ, like I mentioned. But with Jake, they were just like, eh, he's fine. You know, he'll be all right. Crowd loves him already. They're chanting DDT whether he gets pinned here or not. So
he'll get it back. So yeah. it's all good. So, all right. So Kamala gets the win in 4:18.
Yeah. Kamala's an interesting one. You know, we talked about kind of lack of heels or, you know, for like guys to feud with like last time.
Mm-hmm.
Like if Piper would have stuck around, Kamala's an interesting guy. We didn't really talk about that. If he did hang around for a bit longer, it could have been maybe more in the mix.
Yeah, I think so. You know, solid enough. And the whole snake. Let me ask you something though. And we're going to see this more and more. You know, throughout the next few years. But is the scared of snakes thing kind of kill heels buzz though?
No, I don't think so, because snakes suck. I mean, they're scary. But I do think they overplay it. Like, any big heel, they make, like, instantly afraid of the snake. Like, I think it's to show that they have a weakness, you know what I mean? That they're this big, tough monster, but, you know, snakes scare the shit out of them still, just like anyone else. So, I don't know. I think it's more to give Jake, like, an edge, like, against these big guys, you know?
Yeah. No, I think so, too. Yeah. And, you know, hey, if Kamala still has some usefulness, then good for... good for him. Gives him a job. But gets a win over Jake, and Jake's fine. But really, this is all about Honky being so, so smarmy. And good feud. Good feud. And they show the guitar shot again. It was fucking stiff.
Yeah.
I don't know if Honky meant to smack him that hard or if he meant to hit him in the back and not in the fucking head. But I mean, it was not... believe me, it wasn't that definitely was not a held back faint shot though. It was pretty stiff.
Kamala and Steamboat could have been fun.
Yeah, Steamboat would have bumped around for him and worked him pretty well.
And I'm just thinking, like, after watching the Hogan series and now even this one, like, maybe Kamala was a little misused toward the end here. Like, we'll see if he does anything else. I'm not sure how much longer he's around, but he's a guy that maybe could have gotten a little bit more use out of during this run here. Especially for a roster that was weak on heels, like we said last week.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I think it's a good chance to boost another guy, another good heel. Because obviously, you know, as we'll document over the next, you know, 5 months, we need some heels. So maybe, but I mean, I know Hogan already fought Kamala, but you know, you could put Hogan with other people, or you could put Kamala with others too. Right. So we'll see if he sticks around. But he gets the win here. I think more for putting hockey over than really for the Kamala part. But, I mean,
yeah,
hey, you know.
For sure. Yeah.
Could use it down the line.
All right. Mean Gene's backstage with George Animal Steele, tries to talk about the rules of the upcoming match, but Animal just babbles as usual. Steamboat then shows up and says he's here to help George out, just like he did at WrestleMania number 3, which was, he keeps fucking calling it that. It drives me nuts. Steamboat. And then tells Gene to stop confusing the animal. Gene then talks to Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Savage says he'll be IC champ forever, and he wants this match tonight for revenge, and that he'll also take out Ricky Steamboat and get his belt back as well. And that does bring us yet again, Scott, for... Did you end up taking a look? How many times have these guys fought?
All right. This is what I have. This is unofficial, but I did search. They definitely did not wrestle at the Garden. So...
This is all just TV.
Yep. 4 Saturday Night's Main Event matches and 1 pay-per-view. They wrestled on January 86... Saturday's main event.
Mm-hmm.
We each gave it half a star. They wrestled, of course, at WrestleMania 2. I gave it a dud. You gave it a half star. They wrestled on the January 87 Saturday's main event. We each gave it a star. And they wrestled on the March 87 Saturday's main event. We each gave it a star.
All right. So in my world, they're up to 3 stars after 4 matches. So we'll see how they do in this one.
Yes. Yes. And I'm up to 2.5. So.
Okay. So here we go again. The never-ending feud continues on. They have fought a bunch of times, but this would be it. Now, this is they're saying this is the end of the line, the end of the feud, and this is a lumberjack match, Scott, to really keep all the shenanigans at bay, keep Savage in the ring, keep Liz there, Steel there, just, you know, all the components are going to stay here with no nonsense for this big lumberjack match. And here are the lumberjacks for this evening. We have Danny Davis, Ricky Steamboat, Hercules, Jake the Snake, Jim Duggan, Kim Shi, Honky Tonk Man, who's still in the Kimchi outfit, Bret Hart, Jim Neidhart, Dynamite Kid, Davey Boy Smith, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, Tom Zenk, Iron Sheik, and Nikolai Volkoff all around the ring. And I believe Kimchi was there too, right? Or was it just Honky as Kimchi? I think they both were there.
No, Honky walked out with Kimchi.
Right, yeah, they're like laughing together. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, no, I thought it was a good idea for the gimmick to end this thing. So they're all coming around. We set up the premise. Again, nice callback with Honky walking out with Kimchi. Duggan stomping around the ring with his 2x4. He's the final lumberjack. George and Steamboat charge out next to a big cheer from the crowd. Steamer gets into it with Hercules for a moment. Savage and Liz come out next with the usual star aura intact, despite not being champion anymore. Steel goes over to Liz at the bell, but Savage fends him off. Steel then batters Savage and knocks him outside where the heels protect him until the Bulldogs come over and pitch him back in. Steel keeps working over and mauling Savage, and the faces keep him from escaping. Savage catches Steel with a boot to the gut and lands some strikes and chokes, but Steel goes to the nose to break it up. Savage keeps getting caught by the face lumberjacks until he turns the tide again and clubs him to the floor. The faces gently roll him inside, but Savage possessed here, maniacally working Steamboat over. Steel over. Too many S's. Steel goes to the eyes, but Savage fights him off and heads up top where he comes flying with an axe blow. Savage knocks Steel outside where the heels work him over until Duggan chases him off and then tries to attack Sheik and Volkoff with the 2x4. Jesse wants Tunney to burn and ban the 2x4. The heels work over Steel as the officials ban Duggan and take a break. When we return, Savage is kicking away, but Steel comes back with a slam and choke throw before tearing apart the turnbuckle. Savage jumps him in the corner and takes him over the suplex before dropping a knee to the chest. Savage then throws Steel outside, where Steamboat cuddles him for a while until some heels come over and push him back in. Steel now tosses Savage outside where Steamboat's all over him and chucks him right back in. Steel tries to pitch him in again, but Savage blocks with an armbar on the ropes. Steel punches away and bites Macho before chucking him hard over the top. Savage pops Steamer, but Steamboat chops back at him until a big brawl erupts on the floor. Danny Davison sneaks in the ring and pops Steel with the bell. Savage follows with a big elbow and finally gets the win to end this rivalry for good. Steamboat comes in and attacks Savage, leading to a huge brawl with everyone in the ring, and Jake eventually clears out with Damian. I thought this was probably the best of all their matches, mainly due to the smoke and mirrors and the crowd heat that was out there. It was good, too, with the pacing. Both guys, I thought this was the best Steel has looked in a while. He was really moving around pretty well. Fun match and segment. I liked Jake throwing the snake on Kimchi for revenge for earlier. That was a nice touch, too. I went 2 stars for this guy, which gives them a 5-star match. 5 stars for all 5 matches, if you add up all 5 matches. So there you go.
Did you say 2?
2.
Because you put 2.5 in our thing.
Okay, yeah, you can ignore that. I'll fix it.
Okay. I gave it 2.5, actually. Yeah.
Maybe you change mine to make it consistent with you.
Yes, that's exactly. Yes, I'm being subversive for the George Seal movement.
2 stars for this mess.
It was a lot of fun. I'm going to give George Steele his due. Maybe they should have had more chaotic matches. I think the problem was, plus it seems like they wrestled more, right? But the fact that they wrestled 3 times on national TV in 5 months made it seem like they wrestled about 47 times.
Right. Well, and this is the first one, too, where because of the format, you don't have Steele's not constantly going after Liz. You know what I mean? Like, right. that hampered a lot of their other matches, too, where he would constantly keep going out to the ringside and stare right. at her. And I don't know. This one felt like they moved quicker. Like, it was just a quicker pace. The other ones always felt kind of slow. And then that one we watched last month was a little bit better, last night's main event. The problem there was it, like, went on too long. Remember they had, like, the nonsense
yep.
with Steamboat, and then it went on, like, another 5 minutes after that. Like, if it ended,
yep.
then it would have yep. been pretty good, too. So they've improved, at least. They haven't gotten worse.
No, and I think, obviously, the Lumberjacks help the entertainment value because you got all these guys kind of, you know, getting involved and, right. and kind of helping George Steele move around fast, almost, like, motivating him to move faster. Savage is just – he is maniacal. And I mean, Savage is maniacal all the time, but he's right. even extra maniacal tonight. And he just gets better and better as this show progresses. If WrestleMania 3 – and I'll get more into this at the end when we do our awards. If WrestleMania 3 didn't prove that Savage was the man and everything before that, the way he acted on this night should have done it. Because he knows how to handle – he just knows how to handle – or knew how to handle any situation at any time. And he knew what he needed to do on this particular night. And he was just crazy. He's like, all right, I got to get rid of this stupid animal. I want my title back. I want Steamboat. This guy's just being an annoyance now. It's time for me to put him down. Put the dog down. Put the animal down. And he did. And to George Steele's credit, again, he probably – is the best he's moved probably – since we started the refresh. And I think all the guys helped. The Jake, you know, and hey, pretty creative, I have to say, on a side note, pretty creative for them on this night to kind of go back to the previous match and previous feud and have the whole kimchi. Like, they could have just shut the door on that for the night. Right. And instead Jake is a guy that, he's like the one guy on the roster at the time. Tell me what you think of this. He's the one guy on the roster at the time that you could believe didn't forget about what just happened. Like other baby faces, the way, you know, shows are written and everything. All right, whatever. That segment ended. Time to move on to the next one. And, you know, they have to act like they don't remember what the hell happened. But Jake's one of those guys you can't do that with. He's too smart. Too much psychology. So he was – of all the things that have happened and all the extracurriculars we got out of this match, the fact that – you know, he threw the snake, the real kimchi, made the perfect sense. And I was listening to the WrestleMania 3 podcast earlier today, and John said that he thought that this feud, Jake and Honky, was even more important than JYD and Harley. And you could argue it's pretty close. Yeah. But I thought Jake was fantastic. I mean, I'm not taking away, obviously, from Savage mm-hmm. and Steel, but Savage is Savage. There's not much more to say about him at this point, and we'll get more into him later on in the program. But this was just a well-written segment. This is one of the best segments for me to this point in Saturday Night's Main Event history because, you know, to be able to look outside the box and keep another feud going while having Savage get put over and having George Steel actually have his best match – overall, JR, one of the best segments mm-hmm. in the show's history. You know,
yeah.
Everybody moved around. It looked great. It was great. I was pleasantly surprised. I remember being that good. So 2.5 for me. Your official match time is, I think it's 6:20. I think. Let me see. 6:44.
Yep.
Your official runtime. And the feud is finally over.
Thank God.
Thank
That's
God.
Enough.
But didn't it seem like more matches? Like when you said to me today, goes, do me a favor.
WrestleMania 3, they're basically in a match together. Like they've crossed paths.
I can't believe they didn't get one. We didn't get one house show match.
No, I know. Thankfully.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, could you imagine? Because it was a house show match, you'd have Steel and Savage go fucking 14 minutes, and then you're really in the way. Like, I watched Kelly, like, talk his way out of that one.
I watched like three of these matches for Jeff Learns Wrestling too. So to me, it's like they've been fucking 10 times. They've figured all right, so we go backstage where Mean Gene is with Bobby Heenan and Andre the Giant. They're all crammed into this tiny little couch.
On a side note, before we move on with that segment, I'm looking at the list. Did Savage win all of them?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Steel, he definitely won all of them, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It was either by DQ or pin, but yeah, he won them all.
Okay.
All right, Gene's with Bobby and Andre on a tiny couch. They're all kind of squeezed in. Bobby has his neck brace on. Gene asks about the loss of WrestleMania 3. Bobby says there was no loss for them. They defeated Hogan fair and square. Andre says he was cheated. Excuse me. Andre says he was cheated and is the real champion. Bobby says referees are always biased for Hogan, as is Jack Tunney. Bobby has film footage to prove it, and we revisit WrestleMania 3 when Andre fell on Hulk during a body slam for a very close two count. Bobby states it was actually a three count, and they were hosed. Andre backs him up and says he is the world champion. Heenan thinks Hulk should be stripped, and Andre should be champion, or at least be granted a rematch. I thought this was a great segment. I think it keeps Hogan Andre burning and at the front, you know, of things, even though they're not wrestling tonight. And this is actually the first Saturday's main event without a Hogan match, by the way.
Yes, it is. I was going to mention that later, here. But yeah.
Yeah, so right. We've had the first 10 Saturday's main events have had Hogan wrestle. But he'll be here. But I like this segment a lot. I thought, it, you know, it keeps Andre hot. It made sense. It plays off very well from what happened at 3. And it sets up a potential rematch nicely for Andre, too. So I thought it was a really good segment, even though they're all awkwardly on this tiny couch. But
I know, it was weird.
Yeah. So what did you think of this thing?
I'm liking that we're striking the iron quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's been – technically it's been a month. But it was definitely talked about on the Cindies the whole month of April. I definitely remember that on Superstars, Challenge, All-American – Primetime. They definitely were talking about the whole Joey Morella, you know, Phantom 3 account or whatever. So this is not – if you just watched tonight's main event, you're just hearing about it for the first time. But again, like myself and Johnny, and if you're watching it – if you were watching everything back then, which we were, this was not new. This was new for the national audience. But they had been talking about this for the whole month on, again, Primetime and Superstars. And I'll tell you something. You can laugh all you want. They almost made it too believable. And I for a long time, I thought, well, yeah, you know, it's all, you know, it's Hogan.
Yeah, well, you know.
Well, you know. But, I mean, they made it dangerously close. Like, Hogan, I don't know if Andre was like, being a little, you know, taking a liberty, but that's not Andre's. That wasn't Andre's style.
Well, so, you know, it's funny, too, because you say, because Jeff, when we did this WrestleMania 3 and then Fallout, he asked me basically that question, because we watched parts of this show, too. If was Andre almost pinning Hogan part of the plan to keep the rematch going, or did it just kind of happen and then they went back and retconned it into the story? So did they plan that knowing they'd set up the rematch via that, or did it happen and then they decided to do the rematch based on that? I think it was set up. I think that was part of the match layout.
Oh, I think it was. No, I think it was too.
So he would have a reason to have a rematch later.
That's why, because that's why the camera angle. Because how often do we have a camera angle that bad?
Yeah.
Normally, you clearly see the referee counting a pin, and it just so happened that for this moment, you know, whoever the hell, you know, Kerwin or whoever doesn't switch cameras to get a clear look at that three count. We get the three count from behind Andre's fat ass or whatever. You know, we somehow can't see all of Morella's count. No, that was definitely part of the match. No, there's no doubt about it. It was definitely a trope, or not trope, it was definitely a hook for this and for the rest of the summer. Because if Andre is taking time off, or we don't see a lot of him, something needs to percolate between now and the fall. So, that's an interesting question by Jeff. I think newer, you know, wrestling fans who may not understand this probably would think that. Did Andre take a liberty?
He'd think Andre took a liberty. His question was, did that happen and then they came up with a storyline after, basically, for the rematch? Or was that baked in knowing that they were going to have a rematch later and they wanted to use this? You know what I'm saying? That's what he thought.
I think, no, there's no doubt, because obviously the whole point of Hogan attempting to slam Andre that early was to create the pinfall. He wasn't going to slam him then. So, no, there's no doubt that that was the plan. I don't think there's any doubt that was the plan. Because obviously they can make a – they can make a – you know, the storyline have some teeth. That's why they did it in the beginning and not like halfway through the match. You know what I mean? They did it in the beginning and then, you know, they continued the rest of the match, which went on for another, what, like 11 and a half minutes. Had they did that move like 8 minutes into the match, then I think you would have a very different tone, because it's kind of like what you talked about with Savage Steamboat, with the, you know, the phantom pin after the elbow drop when the ref was down. That was only a couple minutes before the match ended. Whereas here, the slam happened early on, and then it kind of went out of your head.
Right.
And then the next 11 minutes happened, and then,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So Hogan being that stupid to try a pin that early, to try a – like you even said it. Like you said it here. Hogan wrestled a very dopey match.
Yeah, very stupid.
For somebody who's usually pretty smart about his match layout. To try to go for a slam immediately on a 500-pound guy is pretty dumb. So obviously they did it to give you the phantom pin early so you're not thinking about it when the match is over. At the end, you're thinking about the fact he did slam him, did drop the leg, did retain the title. You're not thinking about the slam at the beginning until that next Monday on primetime, and I started watching on the Cindies and on Superstars when Bobby started bitching. And then you get to that point. So the placement, not only was it a setup, but it was definitely a smart spot in the match very early on. So by the time you get to the end, when Hogan actually slams Andre and pins him, you don't really remember the pin at the botched slam at the beginning until Bobby starts, you know, bitching about it post mortem. So it's tremendous. It worked out well enough, and even Gorilla, Jesse acknowledges it. You know, he's like, you know what, Gorilla, I had said that, or Vince, I had said that night, or McMahon. I had said that night in Pontiac that Hulk Hogan won the match and was the champion. But now I'm thinking, I don't know. I mean, it is Jesse. And
right. He's really good. And by the end of the show, he's convinced. That's great. We'll get there. By the end of the night, he's completely worked himself up into this mentality that, oh, yeah, Andre's the champion.
So
it starts here.
Great segment. It was a great segment. Yeah. Well worked. And it gets the ball rolling for the next, like, 6 months.
All right, we go elsewhere backstage. Gene is with the Hart Foundation. They stole the belts from the British Bulldogs. Jimmy Hart mocks Gene and says the Bulldogs are crybabies and they can have a shot tonight. Gene says with Davis here won't be a fair shot, and Davis tries to attack Gene. And that brings us to our big time 2 out of 3 fall rules tag team title rematch between the British Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation. Tons of anticipation and excitement for this one. Of course, coming off WrestleMania 3, we had the 6-man, and now we get the title match here that we didn't get there. Jesse agrees with Bobby and Andre after seeing the footage, like we mentioned. Tito Santana joins the Bulldogs and Matilda at ringside, and the Harts march out with Jimmy Hart and Danny Davis in tow. Matilda chases after Jimmy and gets him on the leg as he leaps to the floor and the crowd goes nuts, reminiscent of the Crime Dog. Jimmy regroups outside, and then we open up with Brett and Davey Boy starting things off. Davey takes control and works the arm, but Brett twists free and goes to a headlock. Davey breaks the hold and sends Brett over with a backdrop and goes to the arm, gets a crucifix for 2. Brett catches Davey with a knee to the gut and tags Anvil, who starts unloading his power strike offense. Anvil shoves Davey into the corner, and the Harts start to quick tag and double team as Jesse tells Vince to shut up so he can hear Jimmy at ringside with the megaphone. Brett grabs a near fall as he works Davey over with precision. Davey buries the knees to the face on the charging Hart and tags Dynamite to a pop. Dynamite shoots Brett hard to the corner and spikes him to the mat. Dynamite mixes in some near falls with his crisp onslaught as Anvil just comes in and cleans house. Davey ends up outside and Davis kicks away at him until Tito makes a save. Eventually the bell rings and the referee calls for DQ for the first fall due to all the double teaming by the Harts. Tito comes to the ring and runs off Davis and the champs release. After break, second fall is underway and the Harts are in control of Dynamite. Still quick tagging, dominating Dynamite in the corner. Anvil confronts with a front face, controls with a front face lock, and Harts come in. Bret Hart comes in with a Hart elbow to the back for 2. Dynamite comes back with a headlock with a headbutt, but Brett hooks the leg and tags an anvil, who blocks Dynamite with a tight front face lock. Dynamite's nose gets busted open here as Brett baits Davian down to the floor, allowing Anvil to choke away at will. Dynamite's nose is just pouring blood now as the Hearts keep working him over. Brett ties up Dynamite in the ropes and charges, but Dynamite escapes and he crotches himself in the ropes. Dynamite makes the tag, and Davey comes in and cleans house, running through both champions, nabbing near falls along the way. Anvil finally slows down Davey with a knee to the gut, and the Hearts double team in the corner, but Anvil accidentally knocks Brett to the floor. Tito comes in and wipes out Danny Davis, and Davey press slams Dynamite onto Anvil for the win, giving the Bulldogs the victory in two straight falls and the titles. The crowd's going nuts. The Bulldogs are celebrating. Vince is fired up. However, Jesse starts laughing maniacally, and the Fink doesn't announce them as new champions when he says the British Bulldogs won, and we find out because there was a disqualification in the first fall. They cannot win the titles. Vince agrees with Jesse, and we just kind of move on, which I thought was weird. A great match with a wild atmosphere, top-notch pacing. Crowd heat is crazy. Dynamite's bloody nose, I thought, really added to things, too. And the finish, though, I thought was a bit wonky. I thought they should have made it more clear or a bigger deal what was going on. It was just Jesse's like, ah, ha, ha. You know, there was a disqualification, McMahon. Oh, you're right, Jesse. All right, we'll be back after this. like, there's no even, like, I feel like the live crap, I had no clue what the fuck was going on. They don't make it, like, a big deal. And the Bulldogs don't even seem really disappointed. It's like the whole thing was just odd. But the match itself is great. I went 3.5 stars on this. I really love this tag match, but I just thought the finish was kind of weird. Not the finish itself, but the way they presented it.
I gave it 3 stars. I loved it. I loved the end. I liked it. I thought it was fantastic that Jesse was the only one that knew the fix, not the fix, but knew what was going on, and the rest of everybody. I thought it was awesome.
No, that was great, but I meant they don't explain it after. Vince is like, oh, you're right, Jesse. And like, it's not like they're not upset about it. It's not weird. It's just, it's for something that everyone just acts normal about. Only Jesse knew. You know what I mean? Like, no one else realized it. And then as soon as Jesse says it, all of a sudden Vince is like, oh, you're right. Okay. I don't know.
It's almost like, I mean, maybe it was the beginning of the dismissal of the Bulldogs as a credible contender. I don't know.
But they don't even seem that upset. The Bulldogs, they're just kind of like standing around. I don't know. The whole thing was confusing. It's like they were trying to sell it like Jesse and maybe the Hearts knew some secret clause that no one else knew. But as soon as he says it, everyone just accepts it. Like, I thought it would have been better if, like, Vince, like, challenges it. And, like, are you sure, right, Jesse? We got to get a ruling from Jack. You know, like, do a little bit more. It's just kind of like, oh, you rascals, you got us. Like, and then just, like, move on. It's like, there's no...
God, you're right. I didn't know that. It's like so...
Yeah, they just, like, move on. Like, there's no, like, oh, the British Bulldogs are, oh, my God, they better get another chance. Like, there's none of that. Like, they're just like, okay, well, maybe next time, guys. It's like, we're on to the next one.
You know, see you later.
Yeah, it was just, the whole thing was just odd.
Yeah, that instance, it was odd. I agree. But I just love Jesse.
Oh, yeah, he was great. Yeah.
So, such a shit eater, you know? Yeah. It was tremendous. The match was great. It's the Hearts. And Dynamite's still looking pretty good, so I don't think any of the major injuries have hit him yet, but... I kind of like Bulldog. I like Dynamite with a shaved head. He looks a little, you know, bored, psychotic, I guess. Kind of sad, but a tremendous match. Let me ask you, how different do you feel? No, I shouldn't ask it that way. Let me ask it. How different do you feel about the Hearts as a team in the company image wise now than say, 8 months earlier when you thought by the end, you know, tail end of the summer, they were kind of treading water? Did the belts help them that much?
The Hearts?
Get out of the doldrums?
The Hearts? Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Hearts?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're definitely... they definitely feel like stars now. I mean, the titles and Danny Davis, like, did wonders to them. Like, now they got everything. They gave them everything they needed to all of a sudden become, like, a hot act. I mean, the heat for them is crazy. I really like them here. I think they feel like a big deal now. And it wasn't that they didn't have the talent or ability before. It's just that they weren't being presented as such. All it took was them putting them at the top of the card, giving them a heat magnet and Danny Davis, and letting them do their thing. Like, they always had it in them. They just weren't presented that way. All they did was draws with the Killer Bees. You know, like, now they're getting prominent spots and big-time wins, and Danny Davis has tons of heat on them. And, yeah, no, they feel like a big-time difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Hart Foundation retain the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships with a great match. Your total run time is... I don't think it quite hit double digits. Nope, 9:48. Fell just short. But a great match. Probably one of the best tag matches we've had in the history of the show. All right, why don't we take a break? A lot of action so far, and actually, really good show.
Yeah,
so far
it's been
really
very strong so far. Yeah. They've been in a groove. I mean, Saturday's Main Event, I think in later years, like me growing up, was always really exciting. But when you look at like the quality of the matches and stuff, this run we're in right now from like whatever it is, like Ben, like maybe all through 86 into 87 have been, I feel like we're always constantly in that 6.5-7 range for these shows because there's been like at least one really good match on every show or a big angle. So, things are looking good.
No, it's great. I mean, the Jake stuff's been great. Savage finally vanquishes the Animal. We have a tremendous tag team match, even with a stipulation that only the heel knew, which made it even better, even though we probably could have used a little more selling. That's what it was. There wasn't enough selling of the rule.
That's what I've been trying to say. Right. They don't. It doesn't seem like a big deal. It's like a Russo Raw. You know what I mean? Like, it's on to the next thing segment without digesting what just happened. It's just they got him. All right. See you later.
See you later.
Yeah. All right. It's just like, all right, we're out.
When we come back, we have two matches left, including another title match, and obviously our world champion's opinion of what happened in Pontiac. More. Sorry, it's Main Event, May 2nd, 1987, after this.
All right. Well. Christmas tree won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when those balloons
start falling. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which of course includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back here, episode 472 of the Place to Be Podcast, looking at the May 87 Saturday night's main event, so myself and Scott. And, you know, when we finally got to the conclusion of the Savage Steel feud, I just wanted to, I just had, like, no more energy for this thing at all. I just kind of collapsed and just kind of died in your arms, just laid there helplessly as you later brought me back to life and said, it's over. And also dying in people's arms tonight is the Cutting Crew, because they are playing the number one song in the nation this week of the show for us here tonight, and that is time for our Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscola.
I was curious to see. This is one of my most favorite parts of our podcast now, is how you how you serpentine into the title of the song. So I was curious.
And I never actually, I'm always stupid and don't actually look at it like that day to prepare it. You tell me what it is as we're in break, and then I'm like, I think of it as I'm coming back in.
That was very good. That was very good. Yes, Cutting Crew is your number one song, as the new top 100 from Billboard came out on this day, because it is a Saturday, May 2nd. So there we go. So they're number one. Number two, Jody Watley, one of those
Tim Watley's
hot R&B divas from the mid to late 80s with I'm Looking for a New Love, Babe. Do you like Jody Watley, JR? I don't know if she was big by the early 90s still, but
yeah.
Jody Watley. Cool.
She should have been buried and stayed buried.
With Rock and Roll Jiggoo. Crowded House, Don't Dream It's Over. Don't dream it's over.
That song I know, and that song I like.
Hey now. So that's number three. Number four, little Madonna, our material girl with La Isla Bonita. Number five, Sign of the Times by our man Prince. Mm-hmm. Number six, one of my favorite songs because it's from one of my favorite albums, and that is U2, With or Without You. Ugh. From the Joshua Tree, one of the best albums ever. One of the best albums of that year, 1987.
Put that tree down and shove it down your throat.
Shove it down your fucking throat. Number seven, little Aretha Franklin. That's Aretha Franklin. And George Michael with actually one of the better duets, Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
Knew you were waiting for me.
Good song. Steve Winwood at number eight with The Finer Things. At number nine, well, Starship, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, from Mannequin, still hanging around. And at number 10, Kool & the Gang with Stone Love. So there's your top 10 on this date, May 2nd, 1987, and the number one song in the country indeed was Cutting Crew, I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. JR, let's go to the theater. Four movies came out the night before, Friday, May 1st. Let's begin. This one made, it's a comedy, it made $2.7 million. It is called The All-Nighter.
Yeah. WCW All-Nighter?
Yeah, All-Nighter, one word, actually.
Okay,
let's creative.
Molly, Val, and Gina are graduating college, but on their final night, frustrations are aired. Molly's looking for real love. Val is beginning to doubt what she has found. Gina's too busy videotaping everything to really notice. When the final party at Pacifica College kicks off, things do not go as planned. Starring Susanna Hoffs, Dee Dee Pfeiffer, Joan Cusack, John Terleski, Pam Grier, and Doug Chu, his Uncle Vance, in this American comedy film.
Yes. Susanna Hoffs was in it, and that was when the Bengals were starting to slowly fall apart.
And her mom directed it, Tamar Simon Hoffs.
Yes, and it looks like she was listening to Jody Watley. She was looking for real love.
Mm-hmm.
A new love. All right, the number two made $3 million, an action film called Malone.
Sam Malone.
Yes.
Carl Malone.
Carl Malone.
Post Malone.
Moses Malone. Fo.
Fuck, there's a lot of Malone things.
1987. I think Burt Reynolds.
I go to the disambiguation here. All right, here we go. Malone film. Float plane navigates through the Pacific Northwest, landing in the Puget Sound. As the well-dressed passenger emerges, ex-CIA agent Richard Malone targets him in his crosshairs. but he's unable to pull the trigger. He burns his Maryland driver's license and heads inland. His Ford Mustang breaks down in a rural Oregon valley. Malone pushes it to a gas station garage owned by Paul Barlow, who runs the station with his 17-year-old daughter, Jo. Barlow suggests the fastest way to repair the car's tow is 60 miles to a larger station. Malone opts to wait for the necessary parts to arrive, and Paul invites him to stay in the spare room. Starring Burt Reynolds, Lauren Hutton, Cliff Robertson, Kenneth McMillan, and that's about it. It's too bad it takes place in Oregon, and you have Cliff Robertson, it should be Cliff Robinson, and Kenneth McMillan could be Nate McMillan. You'd have
correct.
A team.
We're not done with the Supersonics, by the way, on
Cynthia
this report.
Gibb. Yes.
We're not done with the Supersonics, by the way, as okay. we continue on. Mm-hmm. All right, number two movie of the weekend made, $8.345 million, a drama titled... Oh, we haven't had to do a foreign film in a while. Mit Liv... I don't know if you should bother looking this up.
Isla Baloney.
But... Yeah, La Isla Baloney. Mit Liv Som Hund. All right, here you go. Type Mit, like Mitt Romney, M-I-T-T,
yeah.
Space L-I-V, space S-O-M, space H-U-N-D.
All right, got it. Mit Liv okay. Som Hund. My
Hund.
Life as a dog is what the name
oh,
translates.
Oh, lovely.
It's a Swedish drama film. The action takes place in the years 1958 and 1959 in Sweden as a 12-year-old Ingemar gets into all sorts of trouble, which bothers his mother. Ingemar does not know that his mother is, in fact, terminally ill. When he and his older brothers become too much for her, they're split up and sent to live with relatives. Ingemar ends up with his maternal uncle, Gunnar, his wife, Ulla, in a small rural town in Småland. Gunnar and Ingemar bond over Povel Rommel's recording of Far Jog... Kan inte fa upp mun kinst. Starring Anton Gazilianus, Glanzilius, Tomas von Bromansen, Anki Lieden, Melinda Kinneman.
Anki Lieden!
Kiki. Tremendous. Hang on, I'm going to see if I can pull up this song. You into Swedish films?
Your dear. Beep-de-beep-de-beep. And not just Swedish films, Swedish period pieces. Even more, sounds like a Glenn Butler thing. Sounds like a movie he could explain, he could talk about on the next Spectacular.
He probably already has.
I'm sure it's been on the. It's probably been on.
Here we go. I got it on YouTube. Oh, there's an interesting lady in the picture here. Let's see.
Is it Yorkie Vorkie?
It's racist. Alla sätt jag prövat har varit fel. Med min lilla yxa högg jag tills jag blev stel. Bordet fick hack och golvet sprack, men nöten den är hel. Far, jag kan inte få upp min kokosnöt. Nej, inte ens med hammare och spik. Hammare och spik har du. Var är vägg nu har... All right, I've pieced together that kokosnot is coconut, based on this, the pictures in this thing.
I was listening today to one of our classic episodes. The No Way Out 2002 vault when you first start talking about Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. It sounds like a Swedish Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Oh, actually,
right there.
You know, I knew the song sounded familiar. It's fucking I've Got a Lovely Bunch of Coconuts in Sweden.
I think you should play this for the next Jeff Knows Wrestling. Jeff Knows Pop Culture reports.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. Showman shouting underneath the flare. I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. There they are standing in a row. Big ones, small ones, some as big as your head. Give them a twist, a flick of the wrist. That's what the showman said. There you go.
I think Simply Scott should have sang that. Peg would have loved it.
The coconuts.
Yes. Fucking Renzi Sr. would have killed him with them. All right. Think I would leave a coconut in the living room. All right. And the number one movie of the weekend, a very well-known horror sequel, made $14 million, called Creepshow 2.
Ooh.
Creepshow 1 was actually one of the best horror movies of the decade. It was exceptional.
I'm guessing Creepshow 2 is something Chris Jordan probably reviewed.
He probably did, I'm sure.
A delivery truck pulls up to a newsstand in a small town where a young boy named Billy arrives eagerly awaiting for it. Billy's named after and confused with the boy from the original Creep Show. The truck's back shutter opens to reveal a sinister figure dropping off a package on the sidewalk. The latest issue of Creep Show, much to Billy's delight. As the film momentarily turns into animation, the package opens of its own accord, revealing that the cover of the comic is the same as the cover in the final scene of the previous film. As Billy begins to read, the delivery man reveals his true identity as the creep, Matt Rotella.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Dominic John, Tom Savini, Joe Silver, George Kennedy is in this thing. Mm-hmm. Paul Satterfield. Is there like multiple stories? It looks like it. Huh?
Yeah, it's what it is it's like a serial. Stephen King wrote a series of short stories.
Old
and they
Chief
made it
Woodenhead.
Into a, yes. George Kennedy. Yes, that one is the first one. George Kennedy plays an owner of like a general store in like a deserted town, and he gets bullied by these like young Indian like teenagers or whatever, and the Indian chief statue in the front of the store comes to life and kills them.
He comes to life and starts singing.
Yes, starts singing Kukla, Swedish Kukla, Fran and Ollie.
I'm gonna fucking kill you, Moomini. Coming
up next on the Hour Spectacular, the history of Swedish vaudeville. Oh, God. Anyway, there's your there are your movies that came out that week. Creepshow 2.
Kukoslat. Boop.
Beep, beep. Okay, let's go to sports. I think Steve Willie would get a real kick out of this music. I really do. I think he would enjoy Swedish vaudeville.
Yeah.
Let's go to sports.
I want to hear La Isla Bonita in Swedish now.
La Isla Bonita in Spanish. I'd like to hear Cutting Crew in Spanish. I mean, All right, so we're 1 month into the 1987 Major League Baseball season. Of course, the New York Mets are your defending champions. Here are the games. It was a Saturday, so all the teams were in action. Your New York Yankees, 6-4 winners at the Homer Dome against the. Imagine the fucking Swedish chef bouncing around on the street next door in her big red dress. Tommy John. Yes, Mr. Surgery Tommy John got the win. Frank Viola took the loss, and Dave Rigetti with his seventh save. Yankees win 6-4. Mets lost in extra innings 11-7 to the Expos. Any of our other guys' teams? What about Kelly's trash Blue Jays? Ah, they defeated the Texas Rangers 9-8. So here were the standings in Major League Baseball to this point in the season. I remember this. This was the year that the Milwaukee Brewers got off to a 17-0 start. And at this point, they were 20-3 to start the year. The Yankees were in second place at 15-8 in the AL East. AL West, Minnesota Twins were in first place. They were a game ahead of the Angels. The Cardinals led the NL East. They were a game ahead of the Mets and Cubs. And the Reds led the NL West. They were a half game ahead of the Giants, 2.5 ahead of the Astros. Let's see. The NHL and Stanley Cup playoff. I'm sorry, the Stanley Cup and NBA playoffs were in full.
This is the Swedish remix by Lucia. Swedish beatbox. Is everything. You can find
it. It's going to drive you fucking nuts if you couldn't find it.
La Isla Bonita Coconut.
As I mentioned, the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs are in full swing. One NBA playoff game, you mentioned, JR, the Nate McMillan and the Seattle Supersonics. Well, on this night, it was game one of the Western Conference semis at the Summit in Houston. Sonics with a 111-106 overtime win over the Houston Rockets. So the Sonics took a 1-0 lead in that series. In the Stanley Cup playoffs, there was a game seven on this night. It was the Patrick Division Finals from the Spectrum in Philadelphia, and it was the Flyers defeating the New York Islanders by the score of 5-1. So the Flyers moved on to the Eastern Conference, the Wales Conference Finals. And that, Swedish love and all, is your pop culture report. There is nobody Swedish at South Bend.
Are you sure?
So, Well, let's see. I don't know. Is George
there are a lot of
Swedish
white people there, so it's very possible.
Is George like Swedish? Yeah. Well, you know, Newt Rockne was – no, he was Norwegian. Sorry. Newt Rockne was not Swedish. Newt Rockne was Norwegian. Close enough, though. They're all pasty countries. Anyway.
Brian Kelly kind of looks a little – no, I guess not.
No, Brian Kelly. No, Brian Kelly's, Brian Kelly's not Swedish. Charlie Weiss looks Swedish.
Right.
But
well, he looks like he ate a bunch of Swedish fish.
Swedish fish, yes.
All right, so we go backstage. Mean Gene is with Hulk Hogan, and he's there talking about. Talking about his win at WrestleMania 3, and they talk about Bobby Heenan's comments from earlier as well. Gene's then with Ricky Steamboat, ready to defend his title for the first time here on Saturday's main event. And he's also prepared to deal with Bobby Heenan at ringside. And that brings us to our next match, and that is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat taking on the Mighty Hercules, his first televised intercontinental title defense. Big time match for Hercules, the king of Saturday's main event here. Got his big world title match with Hogan, got the big battle royal win. Now he's getting the IC title shot.
I know.
Saturday's main event hero. He's climbing the ladder. Steamboat heads to the ring to a big pop, and they play this off like his first defense overall. Big rematch from WrestleMania 2, by the way. Vince talks about Herc being more than worthy here, and we see Savage and Liz in the locker room watching the match with Gene. And Savage shocks everyone, saying he wants Ricky Steamboat to win this match so he can take the belt from him directly, not from Hercules. Herc uses some power strikes early, but Steamer chops and punches through it whenever he can. Jesse says the champ has to avoid the power stuff and take to the air as soon as possible. Steamer dodges a punch and lands a pair of drop kicks and then chops Herc to the floor. Steamer follows out, and he's all over the challenger, rattling him with an atomic drop. Back inside, Herc leverages Steamboat into the buckle, and as we check in with Savage rooting on the dragon, Herc starts to bring the heavy blows to the neck and back. He starts going for pin covers as the champ is wearing down. Steamer comes back with a boot to the face and lands some hard blows to the head. Herc cuts him off with a shot to the gut, but Steamboat lands another boot to take back over. He follows with a swinging neckbreaker, but Herc fights it off and went to a full Nelson as Savage is cheering on Steamboat not to quit. As Steamboat struggles, Savage runs out and grabs Herc's ankle to break the hold. Herc comes outside, and him and Bobby jaw with Macho as Steamboat recovers. Herc eventually heads up top and tries for a splash, but Steamer got his knees up in time to block it. Herc recovers and slams Steamboat hard, but whiffs on an elbow drop and then misses an elbow in the corner. Steamboat starts to unload with aggression, but Herc comes back with an atomic drop, grabs a chain from Bobby, and starts choking Steamboat with it for the DQ. Herc chokes away viciously and leaves Steamboat laid out. Savage comes in, after looking happily on from the aisle, comes in to pretend to be concerned, but then he speeds to the top rope and hits a big elbow instead, and I thought that was a great spot. I like how, like, slow he is. Like, he's just kind of looking at him, and then, like, a bolt of lightning, he hits the top rope and comes flying off. I thought that was really cool. This was a good match, but again, Steamboat just looks weak and goofy. Like, Savage had to save him. Once, you know, and then he only won because Hercules uses the chain and gets DQ'd. Like, Steamboat looks super fucking weak here. And I talked about that being part of my issue at WrestleMania 3. And it continues here. Like, I just don't think they're making him look like a credible champion at all. We talked about it beforehand, too. He got a couple wins like this heading into 3. I thought the Savage stuff is a great touch. It keeps the angle pushing along, and he wants his belt back going through Steamboat only. Herc continues to impress in these matches. He works hard and smart and is a believable contender. And I thought Steamboat looked fine, like, in the ring, but he just doesn't stand out as dominant at all. Like, I just think he looks weak. Savage saves him, and Herc cheats, and that's why he wins. I went 2 stars on this because I liked the match itself, but I was not a fan of the booking at all.
I concur. I gave it 2 stars as well. And this actually... I agree with you about the way that Steamboat was booked. I almost feel like it was all more about Savage and the belt than about Steamboat having the belt. And that's not good. I don't know if the whole thing with Steamboat was already discussed. We'll get more into that probably within the next couple of house shows. But Steamboat was not done any favors the way this match was booked. Hercules clearly dominated him, and that's not good. So it made Savage. It was all about Savage, and the end is great. I mean, again, Steamboat looks like a chump, which is kind of unfortunate because he's not. Steamboat's pretty awesome. But he's not booked well in this match, and he looks like a boob at the end.
Yeah.
So I never would want to say Steamboat's like the non-MVP or the Uncle – I wouldn't say the Cousin Junior War because he didn't wrestle a match badly, but – he just doesn't look good here. That's not good.
Yeah.
It seems like the shine is already dulled from WrestleMania 3.
He just looks weak. I mean, he doesn't look dominant. Like, I mean, Hercules is good, but he should be. I mean, he should be beating Hercules. You know what I mean? In his first televised title defense, and Savage shaves him from the full Nelson, which is beating no one else. And then, you know, at least okay, we'll take that. At least then let Steamboat win. No, we didn't even get that. We get Hercules hit him with the chain and choking him and gets disqualified. Like, you know, it looks like he gets saved twice. You know, it's just
right.
Not good booking at all for a brand new champion.
No, it looked terrible. Although the other thing I thought was pretty cool was you don't, you know, at this stage of the Federation era, you don't really see heels like sniping at each other. But Bobby getting like upset at Savage was actually kind of cool because, you know, Savage, you know, Bobby's looking for his first title as a manager. And, you know, he thinks he got hosed because now Savage is getting in the way. So it was actually kind of cool to see like heels sniping at each other. You don't see that very often.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Herc should be pissed and sure should Bobby. Savage fucked him. So no, again, the segment is okay. The match is good. And I shouldn't even say the booking, because I like the Savage part of the booking. I just think Steamboat needed to look a little stronger. And again, I think we've just seen it a few times. We saw it at 3, mm-hmm. where I mentioned it as part of my issues with that match, where Savage basically gives up the win on Steamboat. He got the visual win. And Steamboat kind of gets like a desperation pin, and then here he just looks weak again. So I just. They haven't presented him well as champion at all. Like, it reeks right now of a reign that may not last too long. Like, he just the way that they're presenting him here is fodder in a way. Like, just as a guy that Savage is going to eventually take his belt back from. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. No, it seemed like Savage was just due to just win it back. Because Savage just looked awesome. I mean, this show was all about him. I felt like it was all about him.
Yeah, no, he still seems like the bigger star over Steamboat.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Steamboat looks like a chump here, which is unfortunate because that's not how he should be booked. But he is. So he does retain his Intercontinental title, but it's pretty tenuous at the moment. And I also gave it 2 stars. Because it's very hard to give a Steamboat match a really lousy grade. But when he really doesn't even do much, it's kind of hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to give him any credit for anything. So so anyway, Ricky Steamboat, your match time is... 6:42. Tom, give it a decent amount of TV time, but there you go. Ricky Steamboat retains his Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
And now?
Sadly.
Yes.
And the way he's booked. Gene is with Jim Duggan in the crowd, and he introduces him to the Science Maven audience, talks about how much he loves the USA and hates anyone that doesn't. Gene says he has been banned from ringside, but Duggan says he bought a ticket and will make sure that Nikolai Volkoff does not sing that Russian trash again here tonight. We then hear backstage from Slick, Iron Sheik, and Nikolai Volkoff. Slick says Duggan can't deny their freedom of speech, and as a great patriot, he will stand with them for the right to party. The Communist Party!
That was funny. I like that. Awesome. He delivered that very well.
But it's funny because he's like right, and then he says that. You know, like, all right, you're right. You know, Duggan shouldn't silence us, and we should be able to say what we want, and for the right to party, and then the Communist Party. So that brings us to our final match of the evening, and that is the Can-Am Connection. Rick Martel and Tom Zenk taking on Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik. Of course, we saw the Can-Ams a few times now here on the show. And they jog out smiling. Jesse says they may be pretty, but the Legion is tough. Of course, that's the Foreign Legion. Slick leads his boys out. Nikolai starts to sing the Russian National Anthem. Of course, staring right at Duggan, just like an asshole. What's he doing? Doesn't look at him right in the eye. Jesse says it's very gutsy. Duggan comes in with a 2x4 and starts swinging as the Foreign Legion bails. Duggan says this is the land of the free and home of the brave. And they calls them commies and fires up a USA chant. So fucking contradictory, you know? And then we settle down after a break. Volkoff roughs up Martel, but Rick comes back with a pair of drop kicks. Sheik comes in and gets double teamed, turns the table on Zenk and takes him over with a gut wrench for 2. The crowd rallying Zenk as Sheik hits a vertical suplex for 2. Nikolai comes in and kicks away and quickly tags out. Duggan cheers on Zenk from ringside as Sheik gets a belly-to-belly for 2 and then goes into an abdominal stretch. Sheik keeps on the pressure, cutting Zenk down with a clothesline and pitching him to the floor. Martel gets tossed outside too, where Nikolai and Sheik work him over. Duggan starts jawing with Nikolai as Jesse says the police should be taking Hacksaw out of here. Duggan eventually comes in the ring and distraction allows for Martel to roll Sheik up for the win. Jesse's just flipping out about Joey Morella fucking around again, just like a WrestleMania 3. Sheik, Volkoff, and Slick all beat up Duggan until Hacksaw comes back and chases them off. Good, fine, chaotic, rowdy atmosphere, although the USA stuff. The Can-Ams look great, so does Sheik. Volkov, though, just quickly deteriorating. I mean, he can't even hang with Sheik anymore at this point. The Duggan stuff was good, but a bit much, as he's allowed to sit. You know, it's silly if they let him sit at ringside after constantly interfering. Like what security is going to let him do that?
No, I agree.
And his land of the free stuff goes against all of his actions. The whole thing is ridiculous. The finish was sloppy, too, as Duggan's in the ring during the finish. Like, you know, whatever. Hit him and get outside. You know, the closing, it's fine to end the show, but... it existed more to push the Duggan angle. I think they could have just executed it better. It's a little bit sloppy here at the end. I went 1.5 stars. Again, exciting, fun match, fun atmosphere. Just I wish the finish was a little bit tighter. Duggan nonsense aside, based, you know, just contradictory stuff again. But I thought Sheik and the Can-Ams look really good. And I love the Jesse stuff. Like, having Morella fuck up kind of in this match gives him the fuel, and that pretty much finally puts him over the edge. And he's like, you know, all right, I've seen enough. Like, I'm done. Andre should be champion. it's like this seals it for him that Morella is a shit ref and Andre and Bobby are right.
Right. Yeah, they pretty much book it as such. I gave it 1 star. I thought it was fun enough. Your total runtime, I think it was like 4:48, I think. 4:45. Yeah, the Duggan stuff, again, I feel like they're shoehorning the Duggan thing in just because they have to, because he's the babyface. So we have to shoehorn it, even though logically it makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
No, I mean, it makes sense. It's just the way he's doing it. Like, he's saying the land of the free and the home of the brave, but you can't sing the anthem. I'm going to beat you up. Which sounds like many people. But I think having him here makes sense because he is going to get a big push. He is a kind of a star, and you have to introduce him to the Saturday's Main Event audience, which they haven't done yet. So I think him, the way they did it is okay. I just wish he wasn't in the ring at the finish was stupid. And I just think him as a character started off at a very contradictory pace.
Yes. No, I agree 100%. I feel bad because as bad as the new Dream Team is going to deteriorate, I feel like the Foreign Legion
yes.
is deteriorating just as bad. Sheik and Volkov are just so played out now.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because, you know, Sheik's awesome. So that's a bummer. But the Can-Ams are, you know, they're hot young team mm-hmm. here in the WWF. And they get another win here after a big win at WrestleMania. They get a win here. Looking pretty good. I think they're due for a title match sometime down the line. Maybe one of our future MSG shows. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I believe, you know, Jesse and Vince do their usual final comments and we're out the door.
Yeah, Jesse pushes his agenda once more at the end. I believe it now.
Yes.
I mean, Andre is right. So that's we'll see where that leads as we go forward. So why don't we hit our awards here for the evening, and we'll start with match of the night. I went with, of course, Bulldog's Hearts, which I had at 3 stars.
I concur. No, it was a fantastic, fantastic tag match. Yes.
All right. The Cousin Jr., this is one of those shows where, like, you give it to the lowest graded match, but even the lowest graded match is, like, fine, you know? So I went Can-Am's Foreign Legion here. But, again, I thought that was a pretty good match. I had no big issue with it.
No, I didn't either. It's just the lowest of the ones we watched.
Right.
Everything else was better, but this wasn't terrible.
Yeah, no,
how good the show was.
Right, yeah. I mean, we get that a lot, I feel like, on these Saturday Smith events. Mm-hmm. All right, the Hogan Award for the MVP of the show, I went with... Now, I know you said it was all about Savage, and he was really good on the show, but I actually thought Bobby and Andre were great. I loved the couch interview. I thought they really did a great job summing up what happened to 3. They concisely explained their issue and set up the continuation of this feud, like, perfectly. So, again, I know it's tough not to give it to Savage because he was great on this whole night and was built around him, but I just thought Andre and Heenan had, like, 2 minutes to get their thing across, and they did perfectly. Plus, them on the couch was real funny.
I agree to a certain extent, but I am going to give it to Savage. I think this was his space with Hogan not being on first Saturday's Main Event without him in the ring. I think this was Savage's stage to shine, mm-hmm. and he hit it out of the park. So I'm going to give it to Savage. Although Bobby and Andre were great, and that segment was great, but clearly this was booked for Savage to shine as the post IC champ for future future plans. So I'm going to give it to Savage. He was fantastic on this night. But Bobby and Andre were very good, too.
Okay. All right. So that brings us over to our Uncle Elmer Award for the LVP, Worst Worker of the Night. I went with Nikolai Volkov for this one. I thought it was clear. He looked a step behind everybody in that match, and he's just kind of done.
Yeah, he is done. I agree.
Unfortunately, we'll be seeing him for a while. All right, our best moment of the night, I went with, and this is another one that had a lot of quality options. You got the Savage stuff. Again, you get the Hogan Andre stuff. You get the tag title finish. But I went with Honky unmasking his Kimchi. I thought that was really well done. And I actually, I mean, we didn't watch these that long ago for the written Vintage Vault reviews, and I had completely forgotten about that finish. I was like burying Jake losing clean, and then he did it. Like, so they got me again. Like, that's how well done that is. I thought that's a great moment.
I like that moment. I also like the moment at the end of the Steamboat Hercules match where, you know, Savage is trying to help Steamboat, and he comes out of the ring, and Vince and Jesse are selling it like he's going to go get, like, the EMTs, and all of a sudden he just climbs up to the top rope and drops the elbow really fast. It was a great fucking moment.
Yeah.
But I'll go to the end of the Jake match. I'll go to the Jake moment too. I'll make that one unanimous. But I got to give a prop to Savage, just kind of stalking the apron, and you're thinking, oh, he's going to go get some help for SIBO, and then he literally runs up the top rope and drills the elbow and walks away. It was fucking great.
Yeah.
It really was. But I'll give it to the Honky Kimchi. That was pretty cool.
All right. For our Ted Arcidi Award for the most juiced up of the night, I went...
Bulldogs.
Yeah, I don't know, though. He wasn't wrestling. I went with Hogan. That backstage interview, he is fucking shredded and massive.
Yeah, he is.
And I mean, he's got this fucking tan. He's sweating. Like, I mean, he just looks fucking just monstrous in this interview with Gene. So that's my choice.
All right, I'll give it to Hogan. I'll give it to Hogan. I mean, Steamboat looked good. Steamboat's never juiced, but obviously, it's always easy to give the award to the Bulldogs. But yeah, no, Hogan would look like his skin was gonna split. It really did.
Yeah. All right, so let's do our final grade of the night, and for the show, I should say, and that is I went. So looking back, I kind of looked back at some of the previous signs of my events. You know, I've always kind of been in that 6 to 7 range, and this is a great one. I went 7. I thought I had a good anchor match in the Bulldogs' hearts. I thought I had a couple of really good angle stuff. You got the Andre Hogan shit, so I went pretty high in this. I went 7.
Well, I had our original written vault open today, placebnation.com, while I was listening, and I was trying to come up with I gave the show a B+ back then, so I was trying to come up with the number equivalent of a B+. I think it's a 7, maybe 7.5. Nah, I don't know. I'm gonna give it 7.5 because I think 8 and above is probably like A- to A+ if you're trying to equivalate. I right. really was going to make up a word there. If you're going to try to equate numbers and letter grades, I feel like 7.5 is a B+, and that's what I gave the show when we did the written vault. So I'm going to give it a 7.5. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Top to bottom, characters galore, storylines put over, psychology like crazy. The whole Hogan, Andre, Bobby thing was fantastic. Savage was great. The only disappointing thing, yeah, the Steamboat's match should have been better, and he kind of looked like a punk. But otherwise, the show was really fun, and I feel like the WrestleMania 3 momentum has just really continued on.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we're gonna as we begin our summer run in our home office for the next several shows, I'm sure we're gonna see some duds. But in terms of just general top 3 or 4 storylines in the company, everything's cooking on all cylinders right now, I feel like.
Yeah, so. It looks like for sure they're going to use Savage as kind of their anchor with Hogan, maybe not as in the mix, as the main feud. Like you said, I mean, he was just all over the show. But it's clear we're continuing Hogan Andre, obviously. Savage Steamboat, obviously continuing on. So the big matches, it's funny because you always kind of think of WrestleMania in this era as being the ender. You know, we talked about that. But this time here, it looks like we're actually going to continue some of the big stuff coming out of the show. Even Bulldog's Hearts continues out of that show. So. It wasn't really the end all be all this year for WrestleMania. So, but and even Jake Honky, like all this stuff is continuing on.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how we edge into the summer with these MSG shows. So that'll be it for us here tonight. Our next couple weeks are a little bit shaky. We are off next week. We have some stuff going on, and so there will be no new show. The week after that, we're tentatively planning to do the May 87 MSG. That could change too. I may be attending Raw here in Providence. I'm not sure yet. So that's maybe. Our Christmas special will drop over Christmas, as always. And then we will definitely be back the week after Christmas on the 26th with one of the house shows, either May or June. So we'll see. So kind of stay tuned. We'll keep everyone updated. But for now, there's no new episode next week for sure. And then the week after, possibly. So keep that all in mind. Scott, anything else you got going on that you want to talk about?
Well, please definitely listen to last week's episode of The Main Event. We debuted two new segments that we're going to do. We're going to rotate every other show. We're going to do a New Japan Classic match pick, where we're going to pick a match and talk about it on the next show. And we're going to start to review all of the TNA pay-per-views, beginning with the monthly, the old school monthly
weekly.
Weekly Asylum ones. That's right. It was weekly. My bad. Yeah. So we're going back. So that'll be in a month. But our next week's, we're off this week, of course. But next week's show will obviously preview Clash of Champions, mm-hmm. and then we're going to do our first. And you know what? Indulge me here, JR.
Is indulge you. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Speaking of indulging, do you know that today is National Cookie Day?
Yes.
There you go.
I did know.
In your house, I'm sure.
Did you have any kids? No. Well, this time of year, my mother did start baking. Well, maybe not this early, but, you know, getting her cookie recipes ready. Yeah.
Greeny hitting the Oreos hard?
No, we have no Oreos. Yes, the Oreos. By the way, on a side note, JR, before we leave, we won't do any spoilers because some may not have watched it yet, but what did you think of the Curb finale?
I thought it was good. I don't think it was the best of the season. I will say that. But I did enjoy it. One of the final scenes, it's funny because the episode where the fatwa ended, like, was like 7 or whatever. That was very much like the Seinfeld finale, right? With the whole, you know, they bring in all the old characters to kind of talk about Larry. But there was a scene in this one toward the end that felt very much, I thought it was going to be the last scene. It wasn't. But the scene where they're in the restaurant at the end felt very much like the last Seinfeld scene when they're in the jail cell,
yes,
arguing over nothing.
I kind of thought that too.
But it ends up not being that. But anyway, I thought it was good. I thought it was a really good season. I'm glad they came back. I don't think they tarnished the show at all. I don't think it was the best season. I think there's been a few better. But I do think it was really good. I'm glad they did it. I'm glad Larry did it. I had a lot of laughs. One of my favorite lines from last night, it's such a throwaway, but it's a perfect Marty Funkhauser line. When he sits down at dinner and they go, what kind of wine do you want, Marty? Red or white? Not red. Who the fucking say white? You know what I mean? It's such a great Marty line. It's just, and they cut away from it like quickly, but it's really good. Not red. But Funkhauser, all the guests really stepped up this season. They showcased them, which is something they hadn't done in recent years. Like a lot of Funkhauser, a lot of Danson, a lot of Richard Lewis. Some guy, like, they hadn't really always focused on them a ton in the past seasons as of, you know, recently. So I was glad to see them get a lot of FaceTime in this season. And Funkhauser had a killer line too, and he goes, you know, what if I killed one of your family members? You did.
You killed
my nephew. Funkhauser was awesome this whole season. So there you go.
Yes. No, it was a good season. So anyway, as I said, starting in a couple weeks, our next episode of Main Event, we're going to be doing a New Japan, a classic match pick. So if you want to find this match, we're going to be talking about it on the next show and see if your opinions are the same. But it is from this past April, April 9th, at the Sakura Genesis show. It was Okada defending the IWGP title against Katsuyori Shibata. It was from April 9th. The Sakura Genesis. So if you have New Japan, the NJPW World app, you can check it out there. I'm sure it's on YouTube or on Daily Motion. But that's the match we'll be talking about on the next show next week, and we'll be doing that every other week, along with recapping the TNA pay per views. So that's some new stuff coming up on Main Event. But we'll be back next week to do that and preview Clash of Champions. So,
all right, very good.
Coming up.
Be sure to get your ballots in for the Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever Project.
Yes.
Time's ticking. We're in our final month. Ballots are due December 31st. If you want access to submit the ballot, just reach out to us if you don't have it already. It's in the Facebook group as well as on the Google Doc. Conversations going down, Pro Wrestling Only, of course, Kayfabe Memories, Twitter, Facebook, everywhere else. So be sure to check it out. Check out all the podcasts. It may have I'm not doing a PTB next week, Scott, but we may have a little special plan for the GW project for everyone. So keep an eye out for that. Of course, Scott and I's Vintage Vault Refresh series drops every Thursday. We are working our way through 1995 Raw. But we have ebooks out there as well for pay-per-views from 85 to 93 right now. We also have all the Saturday Night's Main Events written up. So there's a lot of ebooks there. It's all on the right-hand side at PlayStation.com. And speaking of that, be sure to do all of your holiday shopping with us. PlayStation.com/Amazon helps us out a little bit, and there's no additional steps for you either. So be sure to check that out, too. So, of course, take care, everyone. Thank you for checking us out. We look forward to being back with you in a couple weeks. Until then, I'm Justin. That's Scott. We're out. Talk to you soon.
A Swedish fatwa.
There you go. That would actually be nice. What am I, a Swedish fatwa?
Someday all our dreams will come to me. Someday in a world where men are free. Maybe not in time for you and me, but someday at Christmas time. Someday at Christmas we'll see a land with no hungry children, no empty hand. One happy morning. Not in time.